This CKNW podcast for AIM Medical Imaging, home of AIM Medical Imaging full body MRI scanning. A family history of medical issues is nothing to ignore. Book a preventative screening at aimmedicalimaging.com.
Today on the Home Discovery Show, we have lots of time for your call about anything going on around your home, from a quick DIY repair to a major renovation and everything in between and outside your walls, from the ridge cap to the foundation. We'll keep the phone open, as always, at 604-280-9898 or *9898 on your cell. And we also have a toll-free line around the province, 1-877-399-9898. If you want to connect online, look for the Home Discovery Show on Facebook. And also coming up in the second half of this hour, we'll have another ticket giveaway. Right now, we want to welcome Ellie Hansen, Next Trend Design. Her expertise is color and design for interiors and exteriors, real estate staging and furniture rental, color trends, forecasting, and presentations. And you're all set for your big presentation at Buildex this week. We thank you for your time this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's great to be here.
Appreciate it. It's interesting as I sort of review this whole concept of color and design and where people are going. You see really nice developments around town that are going up, new homes for that matter, that seem to be, as soon as they go up, they're out of date in terms of the color and design before the first person even moves in.
Well, that's exactly why I think a lot of builders and developers need to be coming to trade shows like Buildex and hearing about the color trends, because this is one of the issues that I see around town as I'm driving around. And, of course, I'm always on the lookout for new developments, new homes, and you know, looking at it with a bit of a critical eye and evaluating, you know, are they up to date on their trends? And I find more and more that I would love to talk to more builders and developers about the colors and finishes that they're using, because they sometimes, yes, like you said, they're sometimes out of date before the people have even moved in.
Well, what exactly is a color forecaster? I know that this is a serious business. There's international meetings, conferences, people that collaborate and compare notes. How would you break it down for a simpleton like myself?
Well, essentially, a color forecaster needs some training, first of all. And so I was trained under Lee Iceman, who is a global expert on color and very much sought after for her color advice. So that's the training that I've had. And to be a color forecaster, once you've had your training, you really need to start developing a new set of eyes for color. Typically, the average person drives around and looks at color, but it really doesn't sink in. So when you're a color forecaster, every observation you make is sort of at the forefront of your mind and your eye in terms of how does this fit into where the colors are going for the future. So you really have to develop that new set of eyes. And then we have conferences annually that are international conferences, such as the Color Marketing Group. And the people that come to these conferences are not only color forecasters, but they're product manufacturers who want to stay on the cutting edge of color. And so they come to these conferences, and in a sense, these conferences are a bit like the Olympics that are happening right now, where all the colors come together. Every forecaster comes with their predictions of where they think colors are going for the next couple of years. And then it's a process of elimination to find out who's left standing at the end, who's going to get the gold, silver, and bronze in terms of color. So the conferences are really quite key, because it's not like people are sitting around dreaming up colors to dictate to the unassuming public. They are actually collaborating, looking at all the global events, what is consumer demand, and the economy, and sometimes what's happening on the red carpet, in movies, and all kinds of industries. So all of this information comes together at these conferences to help us determine what direction the colors are going.
Give an example of something that you predicted a few years ago that is actually hot right now.
Well, probably about 8 years ago, I knew that the gray colors were going to be coming. And I went to trade shows just like Buildex and others looking for products made in gray tones, flooring, for example, countertops, for example, anything that would be used inside the home in terms of decorating. I'd be looking for these colors, and I did not find them for at least 5 years. So now, now it's probably 6 or 7 years later, now there's finally products coming out in these colors, which I'm very thankful for, and it's wonderful to see designers displaying homes with some of the fresh gray colors on the walls and some of the gray flooring. And then these gray tones make such a beautiful backdrop for the expression of color.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very much different than the way the tans and the browns were for so long.
We call those, I guess, the browns and the tans. We refer to those as earth tones. What do you call the grays?
Well, I would call them fresh urban colors,
mm-hmm.
Just off the top of my head. They do provide a fresh palette for the expression of brighter accent colors. So they accommodate soft pastels, brighter tones, and they still do accommodate a lot of the earth tones, such as browns and tans and taupes. Grays and tans actually look gorgeous together.
Sure, but you still can't mix stripes and checks, right?
Well, you can if you do it right.
What are some of the common misconceptions about paint at home?
Well, you know, one of the most misunderstood aspects of paint colors in the home is how to interpret the color that's on the tiny paint chip and then translate it to how it's going to look on the wall.
Mm.
Because I find that the average homeowner doesn't know how to do that, and there is a bit of a trick to it, because the wall color will actually look clearer and brighter once you paint it on the wall. And so it helps to have a trained eye. So, you know, color consultants are actually a good investment to invest in. I actually had one painter confess to me that when he was planning the colors for this new house, he bought 40 cans
wow.
of paint to sample the colors.
Hmm.
So if you can imagine 40 cans of paint just to come up with the right colors for this home, he would have, you know, been far further ahead financially and also as far as his frustration and time concerned if he would have hired a color consultant to do that.
Yeah. You talk about the 60-30-10 rule. Well, what is that?
Okay. In terms of decorating a home or just a room, say, for example, you're thinking of a living room or a family room and you want to figure out what should be the proper balance of color in the room. So 60-30-10% rule of color is 60% of the room should be basically in neutral tones. So for example, now that the grays are in, let's say your neutral is 60% gray,
mm-hmm.
then your 30% would be a complement to the gray. So that might be actually a warm white. So you could have warm white leather furniture in there, warm white area rug, perhaps. And then the 10% would be the accent colors, the friendly colors that bring it all to life. So you could have shots of turquoise, for example, or turquoise and lavender and yellow mixed all together. So there's a whole range of accent colors that you could put in there depending on the person's taste and what makes them happy.
Right. You talk also about every room needing a focal point, and I'm wondering aloud, how do you determine what that focal point should be? Is it a piece of furniture? Is it a wall? Is it art? What is it, and how do you work around it?
Well, it can be any number of those things. Sometimes it's a fireplace. Sometimes it's a set of beautiful windows with a gorgeous view. Other times it can be a large blank wall, and then you decide what you're going to put on there. So the focal point, in a sense, means that when you first walk into the room, you want to be looking at that particular wall when you first walk in, and that generally would be your focal point. And then you go ahead and arrange your room around that focal point. So, for example, if the fireplace is your focal point, you have a gorgeous piece of art above the fireplace, and then your furniture is grouped around the fireplace so that all the attention, in a sense, is focused toward that focal point. And that's basically what that means.
Yeah. Are you noticing, as I am, and maybe you haven't, it seems to me that there is a trend generally in home decor and home living in general to strip down a little bit. This word minimalism seems to be coming up more and more often, people just wanting to get away from anything that is closely resembling clutter.
That's absolutely right. That's what we do a lot in our consultations, is to help people declutter, minimalize, and that way, once you do declutter, rearrange furniture in a pleasing way, then you definitely have a better view of that focal point in the room, and it's just a more pleasing, relaxing environment to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, there's a trend toward more minimalistic living.
Ellie Hansen is the director of Next Trend Design, a color trend strategist and design consultant based in Greater Vancouver. We'll be speaking on Wednesday, discovering the latest trends in color and design. Your talk is sold out. In fact, one of the very first of the talks from professionals at BuildX that was sold out, so congratulations for that. I know you'll be talking about influences, inspirations, aspirations, the realities that will help people and businesses make choices that are critical to themselves, their industry, and the ever-evolving world of color. We thank you so much for your time today and hope we have an opportunity to chat again.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Ellie Hansen, director of Next Trend Design. BuildX in Vancouver is Wednesday and Thursday, the 25th anniversary at the Convention Center. You're listening to the Home Discovery Show. Our phone is open at 604-280-9898, or you can call our long-distance line at 1-877-399-9898. Whatever's going on at your place, the Home Discovery Show is on the Chorus Radio Network. Ticket giveaway just after 10:30 on the Home Discovery Show. Our phone line is completely open for you at 604-280-9898 or 1-877-399-9898. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, gentlemen. I know that carbon monoxide cannot be smelled or seen, and you have no idea that you're being poisoned until you're either unconscious or dead. What kind of companies should I be calling to have our home tested for carbon monoxide? We have a gas furnace, gas water heater, gas fireplace, and it's just a concern. I have no basis on which to found that concern. We don't experience headaches. We're not drowsy, sure, nauseous, etc. But I just want to make sure that everything is tight and there are no carbon monoxide leaks in the house.
Well, as far as a professional goes, a gas fitter would probably be your first call. But even before you get to that stage, do you have a CO detector?
Yes, we have three in the house.
And have they been replaced in the last 5 years?
Oh, that's probably stretching it. They're probably 7 or 8 years
old.
Yeah,
I would say that's your first move. Get rid of those ones and go out and invest a couple of bucks, and they're not that expensive. I think a reasonably good one, about $50, I guess, which is still a lot of money out of my pocket, but when you consider the savings in the long run. So, yeah, they're only good for about 5 years, roughly speaking. Some are longer, some are a little shorter. Okay. And then you can determine from that, that will give you a good idea whether you have any CO present in your home. And then from there, the next call would be to a gas fitter. And if you haven't had your furnace or your fireplace or any of these gas appliances serviced in a year or two, then it's time to get somebody in there to have a look anyway. And once they're in there for a service call, they would be able to better analyze the situation for you.
All right, so you're saying gas fitter would be the best person to have to come to inspect it.
Yeah, and if you need some help with that, the little contractor's right here and who can certainly send his gas fitter over to see if you like.
Ah, terrific. Okay, thank you very much for the information.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for calling. Nice to hear from you. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. Yourself?
Oh, it's a sunny day. It's, thank God, winter's over. Dreamer.
Almost, almost.
Question. This has been bothering me. It's not a fix-it question, but it's manufactured homes. Why does there seem to be such a stigma against them? Because from what I've seen, I've owned two of them. They're a lot better built, and they're built in controlled conditions. And my son works for one of the a building supply company in town, which I won't name. And he says some of the contracting he's seen in new places really is pretty sad. Mm-hmm. And I can't understand why there seems to be this stigma against manufactured homes. Do you guys, by any chance, know why?
I think it comes down to personal nature. People want something that is built in place. It's got a solid foundation. I don't know. I haven't heard of any negativity. I'm just supposing that it might be because it seems to be a little bit better than a trailer. And maybe there's just that mental thing. I don't want to be the old proverbial trailer trash. Or maybe they're just thinking they want something solid with a roof and a foundation and a. They want the anchor out the side of the boat.
Well, I've got a 2,000-square-foot house that sits on a 6-foot foundation, basement and everything else, and it's way better quality built than some of the ones I've heard about.
Yeah.
Like the regular built.
There is a moving trend towards more prefabrication, even down to the simplest part of even a new house that's being built. The roof trusses are manufactured off-site and brought in. So there is still some prefabricating going on within the houses, but the actual, maybe just on the west, on the east coast, west coast, the North America, we're just not into that just yet. They're more like European. They like the modular things.
That's really weird because the house I'm in was built back in by a company. It was a pre-manufactured home built back in the 60s. And I went and moved a wall one day, and I've never seen a wall put together like this thing. It's screws,
mm-hmm.
No nails. This thing is, and on the floor, my floor, it's 3/4-inch plywood for crying out loud.
Yeah. Well, something for people to have a look at. I got to leave it there, Tim, but appreciate your comment. I think you bring up some interesting conversation about manufactured homes, and Tim is in Kamloops, and it's a conversation that we can continue. We do have to take a break. I want to read this quick email from Jane. Jane talks about her shoulder pain as a daily reality for many, many years. She tried chiropractic, massages, S-bar used for pressure, and then she heard on the radio about Sierrasil. So she started taking it in the morning on an empty stomach, and she says that's key. She started that 5 years ago. A week later, no more shoulder pain, period. And I'm reading this directly off her email. What a relief. I tell everyone who is suffering with painful legs, arms, etc., that I use it every day to prevent inflammation. She couldn't be happier. Sierrasil Joint Formula 14 works for me, and that's why I'd suggest that you pick up some for yourself at London Drugs or Choices Markets. Our phone number, 604-280-9898, or 1-877-399-9898 on the Home Discovery Show from the Chorus Radio Network. Nice to have some sunshine. Hope you're having a good morning. Thank you for joining us. We're leaving lots of time for your call this morning at 604-280-9898, *9898 on your cell phone or anywhere around the province. Our toll-free line is 1-877-399-9898. And I want to say good morning to you, Perry.
Good morning. How's it going?
Excellent. Yourself?
Great. The sun is out, so I can't ask for more.
No, that's true.
Yeah, love your show. Always something to learn. I have basically two things, two granite countertops. One is in the bathroom. The other one is in the kitchen. And the kitchen one, I just bought a new brushed nickel, whatever it's called, sink to fit in. And I know it would fit in from the top. But this one you also can install from below, which I would prefer. But for that, for sure, how the granite looks like, how it was cut out, for sure it's, you know, it doesn't look good. It has to be polished or maybe, you know, nicer cut out. So Now, of course, I can't do that, so I'm wondering how to go about it, because I would like to keep the existing counter.
Yeah, most of those are done from the manufacturer, and they use a combination of grinders and polishers and the saws that are there, and it's done in the shop in a controlled environment. So we have to find out, ideally, that whoever put them in, because not a lot of companies or anybody wants to come out and touch existing granite because of the inherent nature of it, could fracture, and then they're on the hook. So trying to find out who it is, or find just a manufacturer, a supplier installer who does that.
Okay, let's say I do it from the top, right? So I know my kitchen will work. I don't have to do anything. But for my bathroom one, I know I need to cut it out a little bit wider, but I found this, something I can put on the top. I just need to cut out more. So for that, maybe someone would come in just to cut it a little bit bigger?
That would be the same. I would go the same thing. I have cut them, and you use a diamond blade on a grinder.
Okay.
And it throws a lot of dust, and it's best with a bit of water. But again, just simply because of the brittle nature of the solid, it's best to have the people that have the right tools and are comfortable doing it. And if you can get someone to come in to polish the edge, because they'll make that cut there as well at the same time, and they've got, so they got the right tools to do it for you.
Is this a company can suggest if I can't track down who originally did it?
Sure. Contact Little Contractor.
Little Contractor.
Yeah, littlecontractor.com.
Great. Thanks very much.
Nice to hear from you, Perry. Appreciate your call. Good morning to you, Eric.
Yes, good morning. Love your show.
I'm a small
contractor myself, so I just putting that out there, as this is where this comment is coming from in question. You had a color consultant on earlier?
That's correct.
Yeah, and I wanted to continue that conversation just a little bit more, because one of the things that she brought up was, looking for materials that had the colors that are coming up. And one of the mistakes I think I see too often made by either retrofitting or new developers, they've got stone facades up the front of the houses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not wrong per se, except for they're executed so badly oftentimes. They look like the fake stones that they are. And the biggest mistake being they go way too far up the front of the house, sometimes right up to the peak in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas to me, it looks like it's supposed to look like a foundation material. Something maybe below the bottom window line and below that, but anything above that. The reason I raise the point is that, you know, if you're trying to keep current with colors, those stones and applying them are very difficult to change out. They can't be unless at great expense. And I don't know what they would take in terms of, you know, color change.
Yeah, no, I think you're ringing some real bells for me, as I have these same wonders when I walk by some of these new homes that are being built, and they have these, as you say, these facades from floor to all the way up to the top, and I wonder where there's room for any kind of a change or any kind of modernization, and how will this place look in 5 or 10 or 15 years from now?
Well, not only 5, 10, or 15 years, but it looks fake right now. It's depreciated the value of the house for curb appeal, at least in my eyes. And I don't know what you or some of your other callers might think about that, but, you know, to me it looks just as fake as it is.
Yeah.
Especially since usually it's only the front of the house, and then as soon as you go around or see the house from the side, it's a whole different kind of siding material.
Yeah, no, you're right. You've nailed it. I don't know what the answer is. I'm guessing that it's done. There must be some demand. People are buying these places. But apart from that, I think for the builders, it's just dollars and cents, and I think that's all it boils down to. I don't mind so much when it goes halfway up from the bottom, but and then have something else, another type of siding on there. And the other thing that you say that really, really gets me is when you get these stone facades in the front and the side of the house is so visibly anything but, it looks a bit odd to me. It looks cheap, actually.
Yeah, well, that's just it. It cheapens. You've probably spent a lot of money to put that facade on in the first place.
Mm-hmm. What would you recommend? What would you suggest? What would be a different way to do it?
Well, to me, the guideline is if you look at the front of your house and you see where the bottom of your lowest windows are, the bottom sill, there should be no stone facade above that.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a basic guideline, you know, and I've even seen it executed where some people, I mean, they have stone going up partway on one side and much higher on the other side.
Yeah.
And it just looks ridiculous, and it's immediately less value. They've devalued their house and spent a lot of money to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the answer is to that, but I appreciate what you're saying, and it's something that we should probably look a little bit closer into. I've sort of come to the opinion, And I hope somebody will tell me I'm wrong, or maybe they'll tell me I'm right. But I find that so many builders today, they have a catalog, and there's five models in that catalog, and that's it. You get five choices and nothing but.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for some of these people, and I think it's just a cautionary word to the people out there looking at renovating the outsides of their homes, especially for curb appeal, because, I mean, that's what color is all about, keeping it up to date and keeping it current and keeping it sellable, or at least, you know, something desirable in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you get some salesman coming along selling siding, it's just like the old, you know, tin salesman in the past.
The tin man.
Siding. You know, just be very careful what you're buying, and if you've got any doubts about what your taste or what the current styles might be, you know, get an expert in, or get a few people's consultation as to what do you think would look good here, and get them to draw you a picture of what it's going to look like.
Yeah, you know, you hit on something, Eric, that I think is really important, and I don't know what it is about us. So we tend to just rush. We make the decision to do something in our home, and then we rush into it instead of spending the time to talk to enough experts and to get enough due diligence done to make an informed decision. And I don't know what it is. I guess once we've made our decision, we want it like that. What kind of work do you do, Eric?
And I think the other thing that happens is that you get to a point of maybe saturation and over-education. You can over-consult. You know, always getting three quotes is a good idea. But, you know, you get to a point, some people, they analyze so much that finally one partner or another in the decision gets sped up and just makes a snap decision because they just can't stand looking at it anymore, you know?
Yeah. What kind of work do you do, Eric?
I do everything on the exterior of houses and, you know, fixing repairs, that sort of stuff. So I get to look at this stuff pretty much day to day.
Well, that's the kind of stuff that keeps you in business.
Well, it does. But the unfortunate thing about those stone facades is that, again, they're expensive to put on, expensive to purchase. And my God, if you ever had to do anything to fix them, they're, again, expensive that way. So I just think it's a waste in so many ways,
mm-hmm.
especially when it's over-applied as, you know, it's a minimalist kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, the other thing I'm seeing, too, we got to run because we're late on the break, but the other one is not just the stone facades, but those big, huge tiles that you see now.
God, unless you want to live in a mausoleum that you should be buried in, I don't see why anybody would use it.
Join us again sometime, Eric. It's fun talking to you. Appreciate your time. You know what's coming up? If you want to talk about ideas under one roof for your home, coming up with the spring season upon us, just about, almost feels like spring. BC Home and Garden Show starts Wednesday at BC Place Stadium, and it runs right through the following Sunday. So Wednesday through Sunday at BC Place, BC Home and Garden Show. I've got two pairs of tickets that I can give away right now to the BC Home and Garden Show, and this is how you win them. If you could email Home Discovery Show, one word, Home Discovery Show at gmail.com. HomeDiscoveryShow@gmail.com. The 8th and 9th email through will win a pair of tickets to the BC Home and Garden Show. We'll leave those tickets for you at will call. Be sure that we have your name and your phone number. Put BC Home and Garden Show in the subject line. BC Home and Garden Show in the subject line. Two tickets to the 8th and 9th emailer to HomeDiscoveryShow@gmail.com. A quick break and we'll be right back on the Home Discovery Show from the Chorus Radio Network. BC Home and Garden Show, starting on Wednesday through Sunday. Brian Balmner will be there, and some other very interesting people that will talk about any variety of things that are going on around your place. One of the nice things about the BC Home and Garden Show is that it's huge. You've got BC Place Stadium, which in itself is always fun to go to, but you get everything from outdoors and indoors. And if you want ideas, what better place to go? So the 8th and 9th emailer to homediscoveryshow@gmail.com will win a pair of tickets that we'll set up for you at will call. We need BC Home and Garden Show in the subject line, your name and your phone number. An email from Alicia, who writes, we built a duplex in 2009. It has radiant floor heating. This past spring, we detected several leaks in the crawl space in one of the units. I called a plumber, suspecting it was an issue with the toilet or sink in the main floor bathroom above. However, that was not the case. After mentioning to the plumber that we had radiant floor heating, he said that was likely the problem. I called our contractor who came with the original or worker who installed the floor heating, and they disabled the main floor heating. They disconnected something in the boiler, and the leak stopped. Have you ever heard of something like this happening to anybody else? Should we leave the heat on and hope the leak returns so we know exactly where and why it's happening? What would cause a radiant floor heating system to leak? Could it be the housing that is settling and has something shifted, perhaps causing a hole in one of the pipes? Your thoughts are greatly appreciated, from Alicia. It's a lot of questions, but let's deal with it sort of in a general sense.
Yeah, there's pipes running around there, and they can fail by any number of reasons. There could be a coupling that's put in there that's not supposed to have been. There could be, as the house is shifting, moving around, as she's showing it possibly is doing, there could be an errant nail from the subfloor that's come up and abraded the line. It could be the aggregate in the concrete. Somewhere along the line, a pipe has been compromised or a coupling has been compromised. Unfortunately, the problem is trying to find out where that leak is. So turning it back on might be the best way to find out where it is, at least because it's dry now and we can probably get it narrowed down to where it could be leaking. Hopefully, quickly, because the water could get down to the subfloor and then run for a little while and find a seam or find a hole somewhere and then come down. So the challenge is finding out where it is and then getting at it is another challenge. As far as getting into that concrete, making a repair that can hold, that is still going to conform, it's probably got a tile floor or hardwood floor. That's going to be the biggest grief, trying to get at it.
Yeah. How often do you hear about radiant in-floor heating leaking?
Not too commonly, and that's part of the problem, is that it's once it's in, it's done. There's not really any great repairs for it. So that's why they're very strict on it as far as the preparation of it. No fittings buried inside the concrete. All these things, because it is such a nuisance to find and then repair.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are using electric in-floor heating now as well.
Yes, exactly.
604-280-9898, 604-280-9898, *9898 on your cell, long distance, it's 1-877-399-9898. This one from Katie Lynn, who says, this is on our Facebook page, the Home Discovery Show page on Facebook. I recently put sticky tile down in my laundry room. On some of the tiles, we were not able to squeeze the sheets together enough to completely eliminate the seams. Now I have thin black lines in some places that really aren't that bad, but they do bother me. Is there any other kind of filler I can use that could color select that would match the sticky tile grout lines?
There are some grouts that are available. Grout isn't a normal tile, but it's more for the vinyl tiles. Sometimes it's available at the big box stores. You may have to try to go to the place where you bought those tiles from. Alternatively, it is lift them up and redo them. Sometimes they'll stick back down. If they don't, you may have to look at getting an adhesive that will work with those tiles. It's going to have some thickness to it, so it may lift it up higher than the adjoining one. Sometimes you can wash the back of the tile with a solvent and sort of reactivate that adhesive. But as far as putting anything in there, you can't really use a silicone or any kind of a caulking in there. It's got to be something that's designed for it, because there's not a lot of room in there.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Excellent. What's up?
Good. Question about toilets. What's good, better, best? I keep on hearing Total is the best. Can you confirm?
Well, every manufacturer seems to have their entry level and then their Cadillacs. I regularly look at toilets and I see them at the hardware stores. They're everything you need in a box for $99. I've also looked at ones on online and through the different suppliers that are thousands of dollars. So where the money is spent particularly is in the finishing of the bowl, how well the trapways are and how the size that they are and how well they are manufactured, the volume of water, the bigger name brands, the Kohlers, the Totos, the ones that have been around for a longer time, the European ones, they seem to have a different technology and they spend a bit more money. That said, some of the lesser quality ones work perfectly fine.
Yeah, the Toto, I think one of the things that people like about them is, for lack of a better term, is the mechanics of them, the guts, the inside, the stuff that actually does the work. And that seems to be what is driving the popularity of those.
Yeah.
But the thing is this, like, these toilets all have water restrictions, as you know.
Yeah.
Like, how much better can it be? I mean, it's 1.6 gallons, if I'm correct. What technology will help you work better with such low volume of water?
Well, it's fit and finishing. It's the parts that are used. Their technology, their style of flush, it's not like the old lever, you know, lifts up the plunger and everything goes. There's different styles and different techniques that are used, that are employed. And I know that Toto, for example, if you use that brand as an example, uses a different mechanics. Again, I'm not sure that's the right term, but you know what I mean. The guts are a little different than perhaps a North American brand. But, you know, I will say this, and I'll leave it there because we've got to take a break. But, Peter, I will say this to you. Really shop around, because I got a very high-end toilet. And I won't mention the manufacturer, but it's a very, very high-end. It was thousands of dollars, and nobody in the house likes it. Nobody in the house wants to use it. It looks terrific, but that's where it ends. So buyer beware. The Home Discovery Show is back in a moment on the Chorus Radio Network. Johnny, how are you?
I'm very well.
What's happening? Yeah, it is. What do you got?
I got a Fleer camera, and I use that to pinpoint any heating problems with the, you know, with the radiant ceilings or radiant floor heating.
Okay.
We recently re-gyprocked a house that had radiant heat in the ceiling, would you believe? And the camera was instrumental in us being able to track exactly where the heaters, the heating blankets were, or the radiants were. And I have been able to find water leaks in concrete floors the same way.
Right.
It'll pick up exactly where the leak is.
You do that professionally?
Yeah.
Now, what's the name of your business?
Independent Restorations, Inc.
Appreciate your call. Got to leave it there, Johnny, because we're running shy of time. I just wanted to tell you quickly about a fellow I know who's a sheet metal fabricator. Swollen wrist, got him on CeraSeal Joint Formula 14. His pain and his swelling went away in 5 days. He went back to he stopped taking CeraSeal. He went back to the glucosamine and Croydon, whatever else he was taking, and that helped a little bit, but in 2 weeks his pain was back. Asked his wife to buy him CeraSeal Joint Formula 14 at London Drugs. He said, yes, this stuff really does work, and it can work for you too. So yeah, that's at London Drugs or at Choices. You can find CeraSeal Joint Formula 14, CeraSeal.ca, free delivery anywhere in Canada. It's a fascinating story, because when you talk about it as much as I do, about CeraSeal Joint Formula 14 and the satisfaction that I've had from it, to see other people having as much fun, It's a good thing. Chad Bruhawk has been our technical producer. Steve Seaborn, a little contractor, thank you. My name is Ian Power. We'll talk again next weekend and share more stories with you on the Home Discovery Show from the Chorus Radio Network.